Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the PBSC podcast. This is episode 220. Steve Moore and Mark Castleman here. Great to be with all of you today. We've got a cool topic. I'm just going to read the title because I don't know if there's like a glitzy way to really put this. How can my family and friends support me and my partner in recovery or in the recovery process? And we had a really great submission that was very to the point. It's really brief. I'll read that to you real quick. This comes to us from a partner. She says, "Hey, guys, would you consider doing a podcast episode about advice for friends or family trying to support the addict and or the betrayed partner? It's like I want to send my friends a guide around X is what I'm feeling, and doing A, B, and C would be helpful to support them." And she gives some examples like being supportive no matter what and helping them understand why an addict partner may stay due to the nature of it all being addiction outside of sex, etc. She says, "I guess I'm struggling to explain to my friends what I'm experiencing with my grief, relationship with God, triggers, etc. They are amazing friends, but they struggle to understand that it was an addiction and not him just being a cheater. So they just want what's best for me and think that I need to leave. Just an idea on a helpful episode for all of us."
Yeah, that's a great topic because, you know, we find ourselves in kind of two opposite extremes with this. We either have well-meaning, usually well-meaning family and friends who will say, you know, "Why do you stay with that bum?"
Yes.
You know, when they start to hear kind of what's been going on, then we have people that have reached out to us, Steve, who are on the opposite end of the extreme, who are friends or family, who say, "Why are you so upset? What's the big deal? It's just porn." Mm. You get both of these extremes, and it's really difficult to know how to navigate those outside people. Right? They're obviously not in the relationship. They don't understand the intimacies and the intricacies of a relationship and, you know, why a partner is doing what a partner is doing. And it's really hard. It's really hard. And I, you know, having been the addict and my wife, the betrayed partner, we've also been on the outside as friends or family looking at a situation where a couple that we know has been in this scenario. And even with all my therapy background, I have felt challenged about what to do to help people, which is interesting, right? When you see somebody else going through it and you're on the outside looking in, you're like, okay, what do I say? What do I do? How do I provide the best kind of support? So this is a difficult, sometimes like a tightrope to walk when
No, I absolutely think so. Well, and I think on two fronts, and Mark can relate to half of this that I can't. There's the family and friend side, and then we also get the same question about, like, well, with our kids, right? What do we, What do we tell our kids? Oh, how much do we let them into that? Right. And that can be especially problematic because they're obviously there more often. They see us, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's probably going to be a podcast for another time, but this does bring up a great point of, you know, how much do we let people in? What do we let them know? You know, what is a good way to do that? So that's what we're going to try to tackle today. And I think to keep this concise, we kind of broke this down into let's talk the coupleship, the partner, and then the addict. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the coupleship first, right? We're just going to start off with this because this is probably the most delicate, difficult part. This is a story, right? This whole story of addiction, recovery, wherever you may find yourself at in that process, this is very much your story. And we know that many of the people who listen to this podcast, myself and Mark would be included in this, come from very strong backgrounds, whether they're familial backgrounds or religious backgrounds or whatever the case may be, where there are strong trends and ties about family and what is shared and what's not. My wife, for example, comes from a family, and I'll just be honest with you. If you were to say the topic, and Brittany would agree with this, if you were to, at least back when we got married, if you were to say the topic of boundaries, they would just stare at you like you were saying, like you were speaking Swahili. Boundaries was not a concept in my wife's family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the clinical term is enmeshed, right? Everyone shares everything with everyone all the time. There's constant drama. There's very little authenticity, lots of backbiting, lots, you know what I mean? There's just this total mix of some transparency, some not, there's just no structure.
Oh, and here's the other tough part about that. If you want to continue to be part of that ecosystem and be accepted and liked and well thought of, you will continue to participate in those dysfunctional approaches.
Yeah. You've got to buy into it, right? When we first got married, in fact, I remember a family member of hers. We got back from our honeymoon. Or were we even back, or were we on our honeymoon? I can't remember. We were on our honeymoon, or right when we got back, she had a friend. She had a family member on an open mic with me on the other end. Ask us how many times we had sex and how good was it?
Oh my gosh!
We just got back. We're like a brand newly married couple. We come from a fairly conservative background, and I was just kind of like horrified. Like, what?
No boundaries, no filters.
And it's not like she and this family member were crazy close at the time. I wasn't close to this family member at all. And I was just like, what in the? So we've had to navigate a lot of this stuff. And, you know, when you're talking about something as sensitive as something like recovery, you want to, just like with anything else, what I learned through hard lessons, Brittany and I, what we learned is, even though it's difficult as much as you possibly can, coming together on a consensus of the degree of which you're going to share and who you're going to share with is really, really important.
Yes.
Because it is a you story, right? One of the big risks for the coupleship at this stage when it comes to this topic is causing further betrayal by oversharing outside of the bounds of what either is healthy or what you've agreed on with a partner.
Yes.
Now, this gets complicated because I also, by the same token, I will also admit, while her family had no boundaries, I was the addict and I was the guy who wanted to protect my image at all costs.
Yes.
And so I was the guy on the other side that was saying, we aren't telling anyone ever anything.
Right.
Like, this is my thing that you don't get to tell anyone. I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be hurt, so keep it from everybody, which also wasn't fair because my wife needed a support system. And I'll be the first to own that I really was an obstacle to her finding one for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a difficult dynamic.
Yeah. And it's understandable to know why we as addicts are buried in shame already. It's one of the core causes of our addiction. And so now we're going to self-protect at all costs.
Yes.
Our image, what did I say? I'm going to take this to the grave because if anyone ever finds out, they'll never see me the same, treat me the same, love me. I'll be totally rejected. My life will be over. And so I would go into massive self-protection and secrecy. And what did I do? In too many ways, I, in essence, exiled my wife, which kind of became a woman alone on an island, and she couldn't reach out to anybody. because I've got to protect Mark. Got to be very careful of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a difficult balance, right? So there needs to be there needs to be an ongoing dialogue, I think, between a coupleship about how much you share and who you share it with, because Brittany and I had to go through multiple evolutions of that. Yeah. There were various people within our circle, both family and friends, where at the beginning, there a lot of people were very unsafe to share with, not just because of those people, but because we weren't very secure in our own situation.
Right.
As we became more balanced in our situation and more grounded in what we were actually dealing with, then we were able to have more of those discussions. So I think that's probably one thing that I would throw out there is the key to developing that piece out is, step one is you need to be able to have a coherent, reasonable, rational dialogue between the two of you about that. Otherwise, any attempt to do that with from the coupleship side, especially I think with family, should be approached with the utmost caution, because the one thing you're going to hear over and over again during this podcast, guys, is disclosure, much like trauma, is a one-way street. When you let a genie out of the bottle, you can't put it back in.
Right.
And that is not just true from just the standpoint of I shared something, and so now here I am. I shared something, and so now here I am. It's out there and I can't take it back. We live in a digital age now.
Yeah.
Right? A digital age where when something makes it to the internet or something makes it online or makes it to social media, it never goes away. It is saved somewhere, somehow. And so it's especially difficult because the over-disclosure of things these days, much more so than even just 10, 20 years ago, can have consequences spanning everything from legal issues to employment to all sorts of things. Yeah. So you just got to be really careful and make sure that you're on the same page with that to avoid hurting the coupleship further wherever possible.
And to finish up on the coupleship side of this, once you do decide and make an agreement with each other, what will be shared and not, you must honor that agreement.
Absolutely.
Either side of the coupleship breaks that agreement and overshares, the hit to the trust account in the relationship is severe. So once you decide, stick to it. And I know temptation's great in the moment. Well, I was just in a conversation with, so-and-so, and it just came out. You've got to honor whatever agreement that you make on what is to be shared and not.
Well, and we'll just say this for the partners listening, because I know that there are many partners and addicts who find themselves in a Brittany and Steve dynamic where he's not wanting to tell anyone and she needs a support system, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons why 12-step support groups can be so helpful. Right. And I will say that for some partners, you may have to be bold like my wife and say, look, I need to be able to share with somebody. I need to have a circle. These are the three people that I'm going to share with. And you may not come to an agreement about who you share with. And that may cause conflict all on its own. And that's a whole other podcast. But what I would say with that is, if that is the case and you do run into that issue, you at the very least need to be transparent with them regardless about the fact that you're going to be sharing. Even if they don't like it, because as much as that bugged me at the time, not wanting my story to be shared with other people because I wanted to protect my ego and stuff and things, at least I knew. If Brittany had not told me she was telling people and then gone and done it, it would have been exponentially damaging.
Yeah.
So
who's transparent about who you're sharing with and what you're sharing with them.
Correct.
That needs to be part of it. And the only other side I'd say is be very careful in our family culture, our friends' culture. Be very careful about being pulled into feeling obligated to overshare. Mm-hmm. I have to share with friends or family to be part of that friend group or family group. So I'm obligated to do so. That is not true.
Yeah.
It's entirely up to you.
Well, that brings up a really good point, because like I said, in a boundaryless dynamic, or like I watched this with my wife's family, that in many ways is how they would create bonding, is through gossip.
Yes.
Bonding would happen through gossiping about other people. And so that was sort of the currency that was traded, is just the reality of it. And breaking those chains or those patterns and turning the relationship healthy where, we can there can definitely be connection through the sharing of things, but there can also be connection through the discussion of other topics, right? And maintaining and managing boundaries and keeping within those lines and all that kind of stuff, that can be very difficult to do, but it is something that those patterns are patterns that need to be looked at and examined and possibly broken.
Yeah.
Right. Being for a partner, if we look at the partner's world, for example, being selective in who you confide in is really important. And this partner who sent in the question pointed out one of the reasons why. There are people in everyone's world when they hear about, you know, for example, an affair or a pornography issue or whatever, that I'll put it this way. Everyone has a different idea of what loyalty looks like. And sometimes that's helpful. Sometimes that's hurtful. For some people, and I know this to be true because I've seen it, loyalty looks along the lines of divorce his ass, kick his sorry ass to the curb. He screwed you over. Oh, no, he didn't. You know, and it very much is just an automatic, let's demonize him and rally together in hatred of your partner, right? Whereas, and like Mark said, but the other extreme can also happen, right? Those culture innuendos can be like, well, I mean, because Mark and I have heard all the horror stories, right? We've also worked with partners who've been told by even family members, well, are you sexually maintaining him as well as you should be? Like if you were maintaining him better sexually, he probably wouldn't be doing this.
Oh yeah, we've heard that too many times.
Right. And so, and again, the crazy thing is both of those approaches, they may seem completely different, but I guarantee you, if you ask both of those family members, what would they tell you? I'm just trying to be supporting and love of them. Right. I'm just trying to support them the best way I can. And so what does that mean? That means that we have to be really selective on who we confide in, and does this person, do they have the emotional bandwidth and maturity to handle this kind of information?
That's a great question.
Yep. Right.
Yep. Yep. And always as part of this, you know, before sharing, you've got to consider the benefits and the drawbacks. Yeah. So what's one of the things we say? Big time advice we give to addicts: don't make big decisions when you're in the heat of your addiction. Don't make big decisions when you're feeling overwhelmed by urges. Don't make big decisions when you're in the aftermath of acting out and you're buried in shame. Only make significant decisions when you feel calm, when you're centered, when you're connected to a support system, right? When you can think clearly. That's a big part about who do I share with and what do I share with them? How much has been shared in a very legitimate moment when a partner feels betrayed, abandoned, angry, legitimately so, and then in that frame of mind goes and starts sharing with people. And then later goes, oh man, what did I do? So always when you're going to look at who you're going to share with and what you're going to share, are you in a very balanced, calm, authentic space to make those choices? Very important, the state of mind you're coming from before you share.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a difficult balance, guys. We know that this can be really, really, you know, precarious. And I think that it is important. And this kind of is a good segue into the addict side, because this is a question that both an addict and a partner ought to be asking. Why do I want to share with this person? Like, what's to be gained? If I was to play the tape forward here, right, what am I really looking for? Because I have worked with partners and addicts on both sides of the coin. When we look at it, sometimes there is that part of us that like is wanting that we want to share for healthy reasons. We're looking for healthy things, maybe some sort of validation. We're looking for some sort of a connection. But sometimes the reality is we are looking for somebody to help dogpile on this guy or on our partner, right? Because I've seen it on both sides. I've seen partners seek out people who will deliberately dogpile on him and what a pile of crap he is and yada, yada, yada. And I've also worked with addicts who will seek out that same crowd who just, she's just being a jerk and what's her problem and how could she be so prudish and right? Are we looking for actual support or are we looking for someone just to reinforce our narrative?
Yeah.
Right. Are the people that we're surrounding ourselves, again, it comes back to that question of emotional maturity. I am a really big believer. I know Mark is as well. Of real love means telling people what they need to hear and not just what they want to hear. Even though that may be done in a loving and a tactful and a kind way, it still very much means that, right? It means a person, I try to do this to the best that I can. I try to surround myself with people who are loving and caring about me, but are going to love me enough. Mark is a prime example of it. We have a great relationship. We've worked together and been friends now for the better part of a decade. And I fully expect Mark to call me on my fairly frequent crap when it comes up, whether it's we're, you know, doing something on Dare to Connect, or we're working on something, another outside project or a book or whatever the case may be, right? One of the reasons why I consider him one of my closest friends is because I know that Mark has a special skill set to be loving. And part of that is tactfully to be able to say, is your wingnut side coming out, Steve? And that is important, right? Now, my old addict self would not have wanted that.
No,
I would have loved to just surround myself with people that will just share my narrative, right? They're just going to reinforce whatever thinking I'm currently carrying.
And I'll give you an example of this. This rarely happened for me because I used to use people to vent on all the time, to vent my crap, just looking for somebody to spew stuff on so that they would show, you know, they would nurture me. They would rescue me. They would show compassion to me. And I would just vent all the time. And I don't remember who this was exactly, but I remember the feeling of it. I started to vent, and I think it's like a close friend or maybe it was an extended family member. And I remember they stopped me. They gently stopped me and they said, Mark, that sounds like something that probably shouldn't be shared with me. Have you and your wife spoken about who you're going to share that with and how much of that you're going to share?
Oh, wow.
He gently stopped me. Like, go no further.
Mm.
I remember I was pissed. How dare you stop me in my venting and wanting to get your rescue? You know, oh, Mark, you poor little. He just stopped me right there and didn't do it angrily, but it was very. Now I look, I go, that was very mature and very wise, very authentic, very evolved. And I had no experience with somebody doing that. But now when I look back, I'm like, wow, I actually had somebody mentor to me in that situation.
Yeah.
But it was unusual.
Mm. Well, and that I think kind of brings up another piece for both partners and addicts to consider, right? Being like, how can this person actually help? Right? I have made the mistake, I will tell you, of like, And you've probably actually seen examples of this, like in a sitcom, right? Where some guy is sitting at it shows like the camera zoomed in on the guy. In fact, I remember an episode of one of Mark and I's favorite sitcoms, Frasier, who's like this neurotic therapist. That's probably not an examination of us at all, but right. Where like the camera zoomed in and he's having this really in-depth, really intimate conversation with like, he shows him sharing all this stuff. And then the camera like pans out and it's like a homeless guy sitting next to him, you know? and he just like looks at him like completely and it's not the fact that he's homeless, obviously. It's the fact he just has no relation or bearing on this situation at all, right?
Yeah.
And like isn't even listening or focusing on him, and he just grunts and rolls over or something, right? And you have to, it's kind of a comedic take on, but I've been guilty of that, right? Is this person that I'm sharing with, can they offer something here? Or am I just trying to unburden myself in a way that may not be healthy? Right.
Well, if I'm going to be authentic in that, how many times, if I look back over the decades, did I quote dump on a friend or a family member? And after I was done, I just looked and they're like a deer in the headlights. Like I have no idea. No idea what to do with what you just told me.
Sure.
I got nothing.
No, absolutely, right? Well, and I know this is going to come as a real shock to all of you listening, but we addicts, we tend to struggle with boundaries sometimes.
Oh, you think?
And so we have this tendency, right, to do things in extremes, and we tend to either go the Frasier route and completely overshare in a situation that's completely underappropriate, or what do? We bottle it all away. We don't share with anybody, or we share half truths, right? Or a glitzy version, or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what's the solution? What I'm going to say next is hard to describe. So I'm going to try. When I describe this to clients, I use the analogy of like, think of like an old school television where you had, you know, the old dials, or maybe like a radio. And one of those dials, when it comes to sharing, one of those dials is authenticity. The other dial is depth. Right. And what I've learned over the years is where I can, and I'm not perfect at it by any means, but where I can, I do my best to be as authentic as I can with people all the time, while regulating how deep I go with someone based on the nature of the relationship, the circumstances behind it, etc. So, for example, if I'm going to my in-laws' house and I don't really want to be there and it's not like the greatest, my greatest time, and they and someone there who's not safe to share with, which are there are many people that fall in that category, asks me, "Hey, Steve, how are you doing?" I might say something along the lines, "Oh, you know, hanging in there," which is true, but I don't go very deep.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Whereas if I were to talk to somebody else, I would say, "Yeah, I'm hanging in there, and you know, things are kind of rough right now. This is not the optimal situation. I'm not really wanting to be here, but I'm going to be because it still is authentic for this reason," right? And so, and I think that sometimes we have a hard time distinguishing between those. But I have found when this topic comes up, that is probably the most authentic way that I think I'm able to live, is where I can be real with everybody. It just becomes a question of how deep do I go with that reality?
Yes. Yes.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. And I like the old Brené Brown quote where she says, "You only share your deep story with people who have earned the right to hear it."
Yeah, absolutely.
Either by the depth of their experience, for example, if you're part of a recovery group, or because over time they've shown that they can be trusted, that they're mature, that they're authentic. Maybe they've made consistent deposits to the trust account you have with them over years and years and years, right? You have to be careful where that depth dial goes to. It can always be authentic, as Steve just said, but you can control the depth to which it goes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing to take away from this podcast as we wrap up here is, you know, this like anything else is a skill set, guys. It's something that has to be practiced and reworked and practiced some more and reworked. Start small. Again, we tend to do trauma and addiction tend to cause us to do things in extremes. Either we hold everything back or we share everything. You know, I saw a comedic thing on social media that made me laugh, but only in a very sad way. And it was a woman who was having a yard sale, and but she had this giant sign on the garage, hand painted, that said, "Husband's a cheating jackass. Everything must go $5 or less per item."
Oh, no.
Right. And it was funny on the one hand, like it made you chuckle. But on the other hand, it was like, wow, talk about an overshare.
Yes.
Right. Like there are other ways to handle or go about a situation like that. I can understand the frustration of where she's coming from. But again, what implications can that have? It may have all sorts of ones that she can't anticipate down the road. So yeah, it's something to talk about. It's something, you know, if a person feels right to share with today, they should feel right to share with tomorrow, right? It shouldn't be something that you do just on impulse.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, guys, we love and appreciate all of you. As always, this is just one of many subjects where we scratch a little bit of the surface with you on and would like to get to the meaty, gushy innards of a topic on. And luckily, there is such a place to do that. There is an oasis, a refuge, a cascade of truth, a fountain of hope. What else could I say to glamorize it? A place that we call a panacea, we call Dare to Connect, where you can come and for multiple sessions a week, learn more about addiction, recovery, betrayal trauma, and every subject under the sun tied to this journey of healing and recovery from two guys who have the training and experience to walk you through it in an intelligent way, and who have the former life experience of stupidity of doing it all the wrong ways. We would love to have you come join us there. You can find more information as well as a 2-week trial on that at daretoconnectnow.com. We'd love to have you come join us. And as always, if you would like to have a question submitted, and if you're okay with waiting on a 2 to 6 week backlog on getting an answer, you can send that in to us at the contact form at the bottom of the page, pbscpodcast.com.
All right. Hey, thanks for being with us here again. We love all of you listeners, and we will catch you next time on our next episode.
Take care, everybody. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.